Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well.
As we record this, the internet is broken.
I just would like to point out, in all seriousness, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. It wasn't my turn to watch it.
I don't know.
I can't be held responsible. I have an alibi.
I see a broken internet here and a tube of super glue. So I think maybe it was you.
I guess you could argue I fixed the internet.
Tried to. Great job.
Thanks. I thought I did okay. Wow, yeah. This just goes to show you what happens when your infrastructure relies on a system that, though decentralized, still is centralized enough that if you take down one of these things, causes a lot of havoc.
So first time I used the internet was in, I think I talked about this on Upgrade not too long ago, was in the fall of 1988, and I went to college and I got a Vax VMS account, and that was the first time I used the internet. And I think back to that now. I think back to that period in the late 80s because so much of the internet infrastructure even now is kind of built on top of that stuff, and it was built in a time of trust. It was colleges, and the hackers who existed then were largely, not entirely, there's cuckoo's egg stories and stuff like that, but they were scamps,
lovable scoundrels.
Exactly. They were more interested in exploring than causing harm. And so there's so many systems that are built around an idea of an internet that is not the internet we have, and that if you were building them today, you would probably build those systems differently. But that's just, that's why spam exists, because email was a very trusting sort of system. Mm-hmm. The DNS system, I think domain name system is what it's actually called. But anyway, DNS is like that, and we see denial of service attacks happening there. And the whole internet, the idea that somebody can just send packets at somebody else and bad things can happen. Lots of devices can suddenly just flood your network. The idea that, non-consensual traffic is a thing that happens on the internet, because why wouldn't you accept traffic from the internet? That's what it makes the internet great, except it can also be used as a weapon. And this stuff is going to keep happening.
You might say it's a more elegant weapon for a more civilized age.
I could say that. We're all just living in a William Gibson novel, is basically what I'm saying. Is we are at the point now where we're going to have internet attacks and internet weather, and weird internet things are going to happen because we all rely on the internet now. And there are governments, and there are terrorist groups, and there are criminal groups that all are trying to take advantage of the fact that now, they can commit crimes and disrupt society using the internet, because we're all on the internet now, and it's going to keep happening.
Yeah. And this is one of the tricks of this sort of technology, is that it can be used for both good and for ill. And I think, sort of close analog to that, if you'll pardon the expression, is the, DRM, which of course we've talked about for years and years. Because I think it's related in some ways, right? Because a system without DRM is obviously vastly simpler and vastly more trusting, right? If you distribute, your music songs without any encryption or security on them, like anybody can play them, right? Like, that's great. Like, it's open, it's free, it's easy to lend things, easy to experience and disseminate this stuff. But, obviously it starts getting tricky when all of this stuff gets more and more commercialized. And this is the same case with people who are looking, criminals especially, who are distributing malware and trying to leverage these systems to their advantage. There's a way to make money here somewhere. In some ways that's both the great success and the great weakness of the internet, is that we rely on it so heavily for all these things, including now so much commerce, that it's become an attractive target for people to disrupt because there's money in it. I think it's we talked a little bit about this on Clockwise a week or two ago, I think, with the Internet of Things being leveraged to create botnets. Some people are theorizing today that might be part of what's going on here, but it's unclear at present. And so, this idea of like where is the incentive lie to increase the security and improve how these devices work and make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't happen. And I think that's a real problem going forward as we get more and more dependent on the internet for so many of the daily things in life. I just had a friend of mine saying at his company, which is sort of a tech company, that the server that controls the door locks is offline because of this attack. And it's like, yeah, people, I think pretty sure people can get out, but it still causes a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's when your physical infrastructure is connected to this kind of thing, you know, my girlfriend laughed pretty hard the one morning I woke up and found that like my Philips Hue hub had like gone offline or something during the night, so I couldn't turn any of my lights on easily. And you know, that's an issue. Yeah, there's problems there.
Yeah, yeah, we are not that different, you and I.
Two sides of the same coin.
Every supervillain thinks that.
Yeah, they're all wrong.
They're all wrong. Right. No, we could just say they're all wrong.
Okay, that's fair. That's right. The only person who is the other side of the same coin is like George Washington, because his head literally on the other side of the coin. Mm.
Hey, there's an Apple event next week.
Oh, I've heard rumors. But now it looks like it's
confirmed.
Confirmed rumors.
I got my RSVP little invite
for
the
27th. Is the location confirmed? Is it the town hall?
Yeah. I mean, I can't see how it wouldn't be. The invitation is what it's been for the last two town hall events, which is come to Infinite Loop 1, mm-hmm. which is not where we used to go for town hall events, but this is what they do now because there's more people and they stage it a little bit more. Come to Infinite Loop 1, the main entrance. They clear out one of the parking lots that's right across from Infinite Loop 1, and that's where the press parking is. So you can park there and you walk across and you go into Infinite Loop 1 with your badge, and you're escorted basically. There's a sort of chain of Apple PR people that will take you from the far side of the Infinite Loop 1 foyer, basically, entryway, lobby, and they'll take you back out into the interior, because it is a circle, and on the inside is a courtyard, basically, a big mm-hmm.
yep.
lawn and everything,
I've,
right?
I've been in that courtyard.
And they will walk you kind of across, and what they do is outside of IL4, I want to say, which is where Town Hall is, they do what they've been doing is they've been doing a reception area out there. So basically, like, there's places to stand and there's like snacks and coffee and stuff like that for the press, and that's where we wait. And then when they open the doors, we go in to the lobby of Infinite Loop 4 and into the town hall, little town hall conference center. So is it possible that they've constructed some sort of event tent in the middle of Infinite Loop? I guess they could, but they're not demolishing.
More plausible in California.
They're not demolishing town hall. So, you know, I think it's most likely is that it'll be the last hurrah for town hall. And right, that's it.
I think it ends up mainly being a question of volume, right? Because town hall fits what? 300 people?
Yeah, but it's a Mac event. I mean, that's the thing.
Sure, that's
it's
my
a Mac
point.
Event.
Yeah, it's just the logistics of moving people in and out there was mm-hmm. always the big problem. And you suggest they've streamlined that a bit.
Yeah,
But you're totally right. That's a Mac event. They tend to draw a smaller crowd. It's not an iPhone event.
It's not an iPhone event. They're not going to have huge international press from everywhere who's dying to hear what the new iPhone is. It's going to be a small crowd. They'll fill it. There's no doubt about that. But it's just not as important an event to the world's technology press as something with iPhones in it.
Do you have some predictions? Do you have some thoughts?
Sure. I mean, there are lots of rumors out there. So I think that the easy stuff is new MacBook Pro with the magic toolbar. Maybe
toolbar,
they're calling
that's
it.
What they're calling it. Maybe.
And a Touch ID sensor, right? Mm-hmm. Touch ID sensor. It sounds like USB C or Thunderbolt 3. I think this is going to be the USB-C Thunderbolt 3 turnover. I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the question was, would there be some legacy ports or not? And the rumors are not. So that these will be USB-C devices, no MagSafe. I think the thought is there'll be Thunderbolt 3. For people who don't know, Thunderbolt 3 is USB-C. It's the same plug. And Thunderbolt 3 can emulate USB-C. So if you put Thunderbolt 3 ports on there, you can do everything that Thunderbolt, super new generation of Thunderbolt, can do, plus anything that USB-C can do. So that's just sort of interchangeable. So, you know, hopefully that'll be what that is. And then that'll be the MacBook Pro 13 and 15 inch models with new processors from Intel. The real question is, will there be this? There's this rumor of like a new MacBook Air 13 that could be Retina and have USB-C ports on it. It's unclear. You know, this week's Accidental Tech podcast, I was just listening to it, and they're talking about it. And, you know, there's clearly a space for a product like the MacBook Air that is not as powerful and doesn't require as much power as the MacBook Pro, but is not as super low power as the MacBook. And I think the question is that a new product? Does that get added to the MacBook line? Or do they just call it the MacBook Air and that is a new version of that? I think in the end, it's going to come down to styling, honestly. I think in the end, if it's like that silver MacBook Air look that we're familiar with, but it's got a Retina screen and some different ports, but they haven't changed it a lot, I think you call it a MacBook Air because people know what that is. It's got the silver bezel around the screen on the inside and stuff like that. I mean, you could very easily say, well, it's still a MacBook Air. If they make it look like the MacBook and have come in three different colors, but it's a little bit bigger and has a fan and a higher power processor, then at that point, do you call it a MacBook Air or do you just get rid of it and call it the 13-inch MacBook? I think that's the question, is sort of like, what's the styling? And did they just essentially say, the Air is fine, we're just going to bump it, we don't want to design a new computer, but we'll put new stuff in it? Or did they say, no, this is a new class of computer that's more than the MacBook but less than the Pro, and here it is? I don't know.
There's been a lot of expectation over the years. I think we all sort of harken back to that era of the 2x2 product matrix. You know, as the time at least when the simplicity of the Apple product line was sort of at its zenith, right? Like we had the PowerBook and the PowerMac and the iBook and the iMac. It's like, look, four quadrants, everything, you know, consumer laptop, pro desktop, consumer desktop. And it's like the lines have certainly become blurred. You know, it's not that it's certainly a lot simpler than a lot of competing companies, PC like models, structures when you get into there, and they're totally just harder to understand. But like, you know, as time has go on, you know, the MacBook Air has sort of for a while became the MacBook replacement, right? And now the MacBook Air line seems to be on the wane, and the MacBook is coming back in a fashion that the MacBook Air, they just kind of like do the circle thing, right? Like, because the MacBook is now kind of what the MacBook Air was like 8 years ago, which is the super thin, super pushing the envelope, kind of underpowered. But at some point, it seems very likely that those lines will collapse.
Got to, right?
I mean, like MacBook, they're not distinct enough.
And the Air name is going away, right? The iPad Air is like the legacy model of iPad Air. I think they want to get the Air out of the, they're letting the Air out.
Except for the AirPods.
Well, at least they're wireless though.
That makes more sense.
That's a better use of that word. So I think in the long run, if they want to have a computer in this category, they're either hoping that the MacBook will be able to progress to the point where they won't need to worry about it, or they need another model. And maybe it's, you know, MacBook Pro 15-13 and MacBook 13-12, and that's how they do it, and those are the four. But I think you can't take the MacBook Air design and call it a MacBook. So that's why I end up coming back to the styling of the body of the thing. Like if it looks really just like a repurposed MacBook Air, then you just keep the name and it's like, it's the last of its kind probably. If you really do restyle it, then I wouldn't call it that. I would just call it a MacBook.
Right. No, I tend to agree. And the MacBook, I believe, has gotten the most recent refresh of any of them. But even that was a while ago now.
Yeah, it was in the spring. That was the last Mac update. And so that brings us to the big mystery here, which is, what are the other Mac announcements? I got to think that they're going to do at least a speed bump kind of update to the iMac, because they did that they introduced new iMacs and then they improved them all last fall. This is the time when the iMac gets a refresh. It's an important computer for them. I imagine they'll do that.
It seems like the Mac Pro has to get something, because
right?
It is just so old at this point and so overpriced for the performance it's delivering, that they can't just, it may not be a huge, they might just say like, we bumped up like what's inside of it, but I feel like even that might be kind of paltry, because they made such a big deal when it came out, right? And it's kind of languished, and we know a lot of people who have, you know, invested heavily when it came out and decided then later on to go back to an iMac instead because of the just how stale it was getting. So I got to think they've at least, if, you know, either update it or just sort of figure out where this product line is going and sort of set a better message for this product line. Because, you know, the truth is that the pro level desktops are not quite, the line is not as sharply drawn there as it has been in the past, right? You can take an iMac and configure it in such a way that it's a perfectly competent pro machine for a lot of the stuff. You don't need a Mac Pro, most people.
So what do you do if you're Apple and you have a MacBook or a Mac Pro that you know you're going to have, but the chips aren't going to be ready until spring? Do you just leave it in the price list longer, not ever mention it, not say anything about it, and move on? Do you tip your cap to it and say, we've got a great Mac Pro update coming next year? What do you do?
Discount? Do you cut prices on the current model because it's so old in the tooth? I mean, you know, it seems untenable for them to keep, like, I can't imagine they're moving a lot of units at the current price and performance.
I hope not. Like,
yeah, because, like, why would anybody worth their salt is not buying those?
No, it's and then there's the Mac Mini, which is just sort of like it gets updated randomly and mysteriously. And maybe it would be nice again.
Maybe
if
not
it
even
just
on stage, probably
got some new chips in a press release after the event. And that's just fine. But I think the Mac Pro, that's the thing. I hope it gets updated because it is an embarrassment what they're still selling. I guess we'll see. The other wild card I'll throw out there is an accessory, which there have been no rumors about, so it probably won't happen. But
display?
Since there's a... Well, okay. So, well, hold on to that thought, because the
I'm holding this thought
HD display, I think, is absolutely something we should consider as a possibility, because they could do that, and they will at some point, but will it be this event? I would love for them to do that, but especially if they don't have a Mac Pro ready, maybe they wait, and in the spring they get that Mac Pro and the screen, and they say, here it is, we've got our solution. But I just wanted to throw out there, if they've got the magic toolbar that... Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll be this time, but it's possible that they could do
a keyboard
with the Magic Toolbar and Touch ID.
I think that's going to happen. I don't think it's now, if only because when was the new Magic Keyboard? It was pretty recent.
Yeah, it was like last fall.
Was it really a year ago? Okay, I thought it was even newer than that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
I thought it might have arrived with that MacBook refresh.
Yeah, you might be right.
I remember it being very recent, and then because I remember thinking when they first started talking about the Touch Bar.
October 2015.
Okay, so about a year old. Okay, that's plausible. I think that's totally reasonable. Especially some combination between the two of them, right? Like, I mean, you've got this huge touch surface in the form of the trackpad. You could potentially do something more with that. And, of course, you have the keyboard, which you could extend with the same sort of Touch Bar thing. I think especially bringing Touch ID to only one type of computer, even if it is one of their more popular models, that seems rough, right? Like, I feel like if you want developer support, you probably want to make it available to many more machines.
Right, but I mean, are you gonna put a Touch ID sensor on the front of the iMac or something? I guess you could do that, but then it's like reach out and touch your iMac to unlock it.
Maybe
it's possible. It's entirely possible, but it could be that this is like it's starting here. It'll roll out to the rest of the product line, and we'll deal with the rest of it later. If they had an accessory, they could say, "Well, if you're using one of our desktop systems, you get this thing, and it does that too." But I don't know whether I've seen no rumors about it yet. But I wonder if that's a direction they're going to go.
Along the same lines, what do you think? So the rumor that's been going around the last week or two is this idea of this E-Ink keyboard, which would certainly not be rolling out now, but is something that they may be investigating for the future. And I can certainly think of a lot of reasons why that would be advantageous to them, especially if paired with that sort of Touch Bar surface, right? And I'm kind of curious to know what you think about how plausible that is as a device.
I love the idea of it. The idea is that the keycaps are addressable, so that they can change what's on them. It's like, you know, like a creepy special effect or something. Like you could switch your language and the keys would change.
And right, or use tool icons or emoji or something like that.
I think it's a cool idea because it gives you the benefits of a software keyboard, which we all know about from using iOS devices, and you get them on a physical keyboard. Now, whether Apple needs to license or buy some company that is working on this or not, who knows? I don't know. I think it's a fun idea. Would that be on all of Apple's products? I mean, it would certainly be an interesting thing. If I were Apple, I would be investigating that idea.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? right? The idea that you could do physical keyboards where essentially every keycap is a display, a very limited display, but a display.
Years ago, we had this, the Optimus keyboard was sort of one of those big vaporware-ish products, right? Now, eventually it shipped, but I think it was not quite what people, it was very expensive. And that used, I believe, either LCD or OLED
I think LCD. Displays.
I think LCD, which is a lot more, a lot less power efficient. Oh. E-ink is only black and white, but is
Optimus
certainly...
Maximus OLED keyboard.
Oh,
so.
Okay. You know, E-ink is obviously much lower power consumption. It's black and white, which probably gets you, you know, may not be great for like emoji or something, but it certainly addresses most of your things, especially if you're looking at international keyboard or just a different keyboard layout, like a Dvorak or something like that. And it's certainly probably, I would imagine it's cheaper, to produce, if you're putting a display on every keycap. It seems fascinating. I'm totally convinced that Apple is investigating this,
sure.
Whether or not it was from, you know, I think they probably been looking at something like this for a while longer than this other company has been building it, but it's possible that they saw an opportunity to either acquire them or, you know, license or something like that, or have some deal with these guys.
Or a patent deal, yeah.
Right, right. They may have been looking, for example, they may have been looking at LCD screens on the keyboards, and these guys are using e-ink. Maybe they find something like, oh, that's an interesting spin on it. So I'm convinced they're looking at something like this for, at least for an external peripheral, for like a Magic keyboard.
Yeah.
I've more questions about it if it was to end up on a laptop.
I don't know. I feel like the laptop is the perfect place for it because it's an all, you know, it's an all inclusive sort of thing, and you can't add you can't add on a keyboard to. I mean, you can, but like the laptop is the keyboard. The keyboard's part of the product in a way that it's not. And so
I guess I see the wireless keyboard accessory as more of a, you know, proof of concept thing to roll out. Like, hey, this is really easy to do in a wireless keyboard as opposed to requiring a little more engineering on the laptop side of it. But
yeah, maybe so. Know. But the other way to go would be to say just like Touch ID on the new MacBook Pro and this Magic toolbar thing that, you know, you introduce it integrated into one of your products instead of as an accessory and just say, here's the future. We bring it to you now, which is something they do an awful lot.
I'm still interested in the toolbar from the perspective of I don't fully understand what they're planning on using.
I know, right?
And I think they need to tell a good story about it and really demonstrate this is why this is an advantage over what we have now and not just a gimmick.
Yeah, and is there feedback? Is there a Taptic Engine or something in there to right, let you know when you're touching it? Can I do gestures on it, or am I going to have to just look down and see what I'm touching at any given moment?
Touch ID seems like a no-brainer. I think we all, you know, think that that is a really smart decision because it has become so integral to not only, you know, your devices, but also apps on your devices, right? And adding that security on your computer certainly seems like a big advantage. You know,
and Apple Pay, right?
Yeah, Apple Pay. Obviously, you know, we've seen already they let you use your phone as sort of an authenticated token for that, but it makes even more sense if you can also roll it in, you know, to your computer. But then, of course, now I have to train my fingerprint on all of my devices. A little bit of a pain, but okay. You got to add a secure enclave to the chips in there, which is, again, not insurmountable, but just like considerations that have to be made. But I think it's certainly a direction that they're going to go at some point, and I would not be surprised at all if it started rolling out now. So that to me is a more compelling use case and argument than this toolbar that I think it could be interesting. I think it could be cool, but I have yet to understand what their message is with it.
Yeah, that's one of those cases, and we see this oftentimes at Apple events where it's not the rumor. It's we got the details of the rumor, but we need to, what's the story? What's the story that Apple's going to tell? Just like with the iPhone, we were like, how will Apple tell us about why the headphone jack has gone from the iPhone 7? Here it's like, what's Apple's story, including the details of how it's implemented, but also just the story of like, why is this a good idea? What can you do with it? What's Apple's vision for how people are going to use this? Will third parties be able to tie in? All of that. And that is, you know, something that a rumor saying they've got an OLED touch bar at the top of the screen doesn't tell us, right? It gives us all the hardware, but none of the details of whether, you know, how it will be used, and that's what will be the most important thing.
Yep. Yeah. So displays, we want to talk about that. We were briefly touched on.
Yeah. I mean, just it's out there, like an HD external display, a retina external display is something that Apple, I think, will do at some point. And the question is when. Like the new Thunderbolt 3 capable computers would seem like a good time. Having a new Mac Pro would seem like a good time to do it. and new laptops that you could also hook up to it. And that's, you know, it's possible that we would see that now. It's also possible that that's going to be next year. I was really hoping it would be this year, though.
I can see the attraction of having, so, you know, I've got my old cinema display here, and it's got that single cable that branches off into a mini display port and a USB and a MagSafe. And you think, well, you know, you could basically just have a USB-C / Thunderbolt connector, presumably. And plug that right in, like, yeah. one cable. That's a favorite Apple move right there. Mm-hmm. I can definitely see the appeal of that. And we did have those rumors floating around earlier this year of a display that would have its own graphics card, possibly, to help run it. Because obviously, if we're talking a high-definition external display, that's a lot of pixels to move, especially if it's in the 27-inch range.
It is.
I mean, because that's 5K, presumably.
I think that's why we haven't seen it up to now, is that that's a very hard thing to do, to get all that data out of a computer.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So I'm interested to see, but I agree with you that I feel like, again, you need that as that's the accompaniment for something else, perhaps a Mac Pro. And certainly I can see the appeal of it to MacBook users, MacBook Pro users, but I think it's going to be a more compelling argument alongside a really powerful machine. So I feel like I go either way. I'm sort of thinking 50-50 on that for this event.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out. We'll find out next Thursday. Will you be watching the event, streaming it live, watching it attentively?
I can tell by the tone of your voice, that's a little lob there. Because you know perfectly well, Mr. Snell.
I do.
That I'll be on a plane going to the Now Hear This Festival, which we will be appearing at next weekend. And unfortunately, right during the Apple event. So I will, I guess I'll be following the live vlogs.
All right.
And maybe I will pop in if we do a talk show or something like that. And I will add some commentary or whatever value I can.
From 30,000 feet.
From 30,000 feet. You know, why not? Why not live vlog an Apple event from 30,000 feet that you can't see, hear, or otherwise experience? You know, I think I feel like I've got a lot to add there.
Why not? Indeed. That's good. Well, yes, but it'll be good to see you. So I'll see you next Friday.
And, that's right.
And we'll be, if you're in the Southern California area, we will be doing an incomparable live event on Saturday. Saturday morning, Saturday early afternoon. I forget. Saturday early afternoon.
I'll say
I think
afternoon
at
yeah.
the Now Hear This Festival, podcast festival in Anaheim. So nowhearthis.com nowhearthisfest.com, I think is what it is. Yeah, if you are interested in coming and seeing us, we will be there. We come and say hello.
We'll be there to entertain you.
Yeah, we're going to do a draft, and then we're going to do a little bit of a game show, and it'll be fun. 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they unplug our microphones and tell us to beat it.
That sounds fair. I'm surprised it takes them that long.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It may happen after 10 minutes. Like, no, this is not working. You can go now. Don't soil the Loot Crate stage with your terrible, terrible lack of talent. Off the stage
yes,
with you.
Yes, and feel free. You know, like, we accept beer. We accept all sorts of donations. So,
sure.
You know.
We do. There's that beer episode of The Incomparable. You can listen to that and listen to us drink beer with Marco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's entertaining.
Sure. All right, well, Have a good weekend and a good week. And I guess I will see you next Friday. That's weird.
Oh, yeah, I guess we might have to do one of these too, huh?
Yeah, we might have to do that in person because the Apple event's going to be on the Thursday. So things are going to be really busy at that point. And so my guess is that, and then I'm going to Ireland. So the Secret Podcast may get a little choppy over the next few weeks, but we'll try to do one in person.
Make that months.
Oh, right. Because then you're going to India, right?
Yep. Yep.
All right.
And on election day, because it's the smartest day to leave the country.
That's apparently. You got to get out while you can. So we'll see what happens with the Secret Podcast. It's going to be an interesting time. Stephen Hackett, again, we've established, standing right behind you, ready to bop you on the head.
He's the Donald Trump to my Hillary Clinton. He's just lurking behind
me. He's just hanging right back there. He can jump in at a moment's notice. And then when I'm in Ireland, maybe I'll podcast secretly with one of the Yahoos who'll be at the UL conference, and I'll throw that in the feed too. There's lots of options.
Not so easily replaced is all I'm saying.
No, it's going to be weird though.
Everywhere, Jason.
It's going to be weird. It's not going to be as good as this, but we have to soldier on.
It's all right. I understand. Maybe I'll do my own secret podcast.
Ooh, do it.
I'll find someone else.
Do it. Don't tell me about it. Just keep it a secret.
Yeah, there will be no listeners, no subscribers.
It's that secret.
That's how secret it is.
Awesome.
Super, super important.
All right. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for supporting, member rising. The first year of the Six Colors membership plan is coming up. So I thank you in advance. Watch for that. Hopefully you've got auto renew turned on and you also love us enough to subscribe for another year if you're on the annual plan, because the anniversary of it is in early November. And we appreciate it. When I did the survey of the subscribers, I got a lot of people back who love listening to the podcast. In fact, it may be that the secret podcast has a greater appeal to our subscriber base than the newsletter, which is funny because the newsletter is a lot of work. But I got some ideas for some things we can do in the next year with Six Colors memberships. But this was kind of a lark when we started doing it, and I keep hearing from people who say that they like it, and I enjoy doing it, and I think you do, Dan.
I do. I love doing it. I would. That's why I defend it so ardently from the likes of my competitors.
Yeah, that's right. You should box them out. Just box them out. Put the elbows out, and don't let them get close to the microphone. That's what you got to do.
I got to protect it.
All right. Well, happy travels, and I'll see you next week, Dan.
I'll see you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.